Okay, we're just about to start the class. If everybody could just type in audio okay, if you can hear the sound all right. Okay, thanks, Lizzie. Okay, once we just get a few Ks, we just want to confirm that the audio is all right. We'll start the class. See if we can hear the audio. After you have refreshed your browsers, type in audio okay. And we welcome everybody to the first of a series of classes that we'll be giving here at Misora. So once again, just type in audio okay, just to confirm that everybody is picking up the sound. Okay, we'll start the class in about just 1 minute. We'll be referring to the text in the Gemara, the Talmud Shabbos, tractate Sabbath, and also Maimonides, his words on Hanukkah. We'll go through the philosophy, the establishment of the holiday. We'll also have a question and answer period. So this way, during the class, we'll pose. You know, I'll be posing you some questions, and we'll stop. And then I'd like to see what responses that you have. You could type them in, and if there are questions as well, type those questions in, and we'll address them. Again, we just want to confirm audio is working okay. Everybody's picking up the sound. So if you could hear the audio, please type in the words audio okay. All right, we'll just start the class in about 1 minute. Again, if you want to have the text with you, we'll be referring to the Gemara, the Talmud Shabbos, as well as Maimonides' laws on Hanukkah. That's found in his Mishneh Torah. Okay, thanks Zachariah, thanks Zvi, Jules, Nissim, Yochanan, good to see you. Tevi, Mark, thank you. Pisalo, Brian in Canada. Thanks for typing the audio okay. Okay, Cappy in New York, good to see you. If you could hear the sound, please type audio okay. Moshe in Maryland, just type audio okay, make sure everybody can hear. Thank you. Toronto and New York. Thank you. Audio's okay. Good to hear. Laurie in GA, you just want to type in audio okay. Barry in Florida, just type audio okay. Make sure the sound is being picked up all right. Joseph in New York City, do us a favor, just type in the words audio okay, make sure you can hear the sound. Want to make sure everybody who's attending the class can hear the audio. Mary in Connecticut, Mark in Canada, Kimberly, Serena in D.C., if all of you can just type in audio okay. Cappy in New York, if you could type in audio okay, just to confirm that you can hear the sound. Type in the words audio okay. And again, we'll be doing the class today. Again, we're starting 1:30 approximately Eastern time. Again, tomorrow we'll continue with the class the same time. The reason we're doing it at this time, I know some of you are at work, maybe inconvenient, but this way those in the West Coast can also join, as well as those in Israel. Okay, so it looks like the audio is all right. Let's start the class. Okay, so again, the format will be, we'll present the arrow. We'll go into a little bit of the history of Hanukkah. And then we'll go in terms of the questions, in terms of how the holiday was established. And just as a brief, and again, we will have a question and answer period, during, intermittently, as the questions, I pose the questions, I'd like to see what your responses might be. And as well, at the end, we'll have an open forum in case there's questions on any other area. Okay. So just briefly, we're all pretty much familiar with the story of Hanukkah, the time when the Greeks were oppressing the Jews, not to kill them, but it was in terms of trying to strip them of the Judaism. At that point, Matasyahu, the high priest, he had five sons, and they did not tolerate the idea that Judaism was going to be stripped away from the Jews. So they had revolted, and they were very successful in the war. And even though it was just a few of them, the Greek army saw on a number of occasions that they just could not conquer the Jews. They were severely defeated. And after the Jews had succeeded and they were victorious, what happened was that the Kohanim, the priests, had entered into the defiled temple, which the Greeks had broken down, and they had only found in the temple one canister of oil. And one of the laws of regular temple service is that the candelabrum, the menorah, inside the temple was lit every day. But in order to light it, they needed to have pure olive oil. And there was not sufficient oil that would last. And it takes an 8-day period in order to press new oil. And they only found one canister, which lasted only one day. And what happened was they found that the oil miraculously had lasted the duration of all 8 days. Now this was a clear miracle. At that point, they had established a holiday for all generations. So there's a number of questions. But one thing we should note is that, as Maimonides says, and as the Talmud says, it was only after they had found the oil had a miracle as part of its nature, that after the oil lasted 8 times what it should normally, according to natural laws, it was only after that point that they established a holiday. It wasn't established merely on the military victory. So the first question we have, if you want to jot down the questions as we go, that would be a good idea. This way you can contemplate what your ideas might be. Because we're just going to pose the questions, listen to what you might think the answers might be, and then present an answer, or see who's who would like to submit answers as well. So question one is, in terms of the the establishment of the holiday, why was it not based on the war. The war itself, it seemed to be a pretty amazing feat that few men could conquer in one fell swoop 72,000 of the Greeks. But they didn't establish the holiday until after they went into the temple and they saw that the oil had lasted an unnatural amount of time. They saw that, that God had rendered a miracle for them. So that's the first question. Why didn't they establish the holiday of Hanukkah just based on military defeat? Okay, that's question number one. Another question we could ask is, on Hanukkah itself, there are a number of things, number of activities that we do. One, of course, is lighting the menorah all 8 nights. It's interesting, though, in terms of lighting the menorah, why is that the actual formulation of the holiday? I mean, we don't. If you look at Purim, for example, Purim was a was celebrated based on the actual catalyst of the success of the Jews. It was, as the story of Purim goes, King Ahasuerus had sent out two letters to all of the citizens of all of the cities, and the first letter was based on the input of his advisors that each man should be a ruler of his household. So he sends out this letter, and when all the recipients, all the citizens of his cities and his countries had read this, they looked at the king as a fool. Because at that point, they said, of course, we're running the house. The man runs the house. So what do we need the king to tell us this? Now, what happened was, the subsequent letter that King Ahasuerus sent out, that all of the inhabitants should destroy the Jews, they didn't pay too much attention to it because they already looked at the king in a poor light. So the way we celebrate Purim is we read a letter. We want to mimic the actual element that was effective of the holiday. So the question is, by Hanukkah, so why don't we do something on Hanukkah that embodies a war? Maybe carrying a sword or doing something which would demonstrate the military victory. But the fact is that we don't. We basically light the candles each night, and that's the limit of our performance. So that's the next question. Why is our performance in Hanukkah mimicking the re-inauguration of the temple as opposed to the military victory? And again, just jot down your questions. Don't type them into the screen yet, because I'll initiate that so this way I could to look at that. I'm not looking at the screen constantly, so I don't want to miss a question that anybody might have. Okay, so that's the second question. Why is the performance we have today based on the temple, the aspect of re-inauguration? And the first thing which they did was they had lit the menorah, so therefore that's what we do. But it seems to be bereft of any mention of the war. But keep in mind, though, when we say our daily prayers, we do insert a mention of thanks for the military victory. And what's interesting there is that that thanks that we say is called the Shemona Esrei. So that prayer we say three times every day during the year. When we say it on Hanukkah, we make an insertion in the regular prayer of thanks, which is Modim, and we thank God for the military victory. But how come in the prayer of thanks we don't mention anything about the lights? We don't mention a word about the menorah. Okay, that's our third question. And through these questions, we'll come to an appreciation of how the actual holiday was established, what the rabbi saw in terms of deeming it necessary. And on that point, we can ask a question in terms of, well, why was the war during the days of Hanukkah, the Maccabees against the Greeks, why was that war selected as a holiday, and Purim also selected as a holiday? But you look at all the other wars in history, were not selected as holidays. They had miracles as well. So we have to find out what was distinct about Hanukkah and Purim, but specifically we want to focus on Hanukkah. That Hanukkah has some distinct characteristic, that was something which the rabbis saw we have to establish a holiday. But in terms of, for example, when Joshua took over Jericho and the walls sunk into the ground unnaturally, or the other war he had where he asked God to make the sun and the moon stand still, those were great miracles, if not greater. But we don't see that the rabbis saw that it was necessary or essential to establish a holiday based on those wars. So what's unique about Hanukkah? We have to understand, when we do our practicing and lighting of the lights, sometimes we can shift the focus from what we're really doing, and we get enamored by the beautiful lights, And we don't really have the right concept as to what is unique about this day. In Judaism, everything is precisely formulated based on Jewish law. We know that the law was given at Sinai, and that was the one miracle which proved the one religion, because that was the only time in history that there was a mass revelation, miraculously, to millions of people. There were 2.5 million people there. So no other religion can make this claim, because it never occurred. All other religions are based on the words of either one or a few people that make a claim about an event, but nobody else was there, so it's you either believe it or you don't. But God did not want that. God did not want Judaism to be based on belief. He wanted it to be based on intelligence, on proof. That's the reason why God gave us intelligence. Therefore, when we approach these areas, we have to use our intelligence. That's the one gift that man has over all other creations. So the reason why we have intelligence is to use it and to follow a life that's based on intelligence and proof, not blind faith. That's not part of Judaism. So when we approach Hanukkah, we have to now understand the precision of the rabbi's formulations. Okay. Another question we have is in terms of why there's a concept of Hanukkah about increasing the miracle, meaning the proclamation that we make, really from the primary law, all that is really necessary on Hanukkah is to light one candle each night. That's it, no matter how many people are in the house. One candle each night is basically what we call the Iker Mitzvah, the essential command. But what we do is, in the few other areas of the Torah, we have something called Mahadran, where we can beautify the Mitzvah. The way we beautify the Mitzvah is by having a candle lit not only for each member of the house, as opposed to just one for the entire household, but you also have an increase each night in terms of the candles. So the question is, why is this? If really the law is fulfilled just by one candle for the entire household every night, what is gained by having, number one, everybody in the household light their own light, and additionally that each member should increase his candles on each night? He should ascend in the number of candles. Okay. Okay, so now let's pause. We have a number of questions here. And if anything is not clear, feel free to type it in. Let's just take questions on the facts first. If you have a question on any of the facts, type it in. And then what we'll do is we'll take possible answers that you'd like to pose. So I'm going to pause now and allow you to just, first of all, anybody with questions on the facts, let's make sure everybody has the facts. If something's not clear, type it in. I'll take a look. And hopefully I can clarify it for you. And once we've clarified and everybody has the questions, then I'd like to see what you might think about it. So you go ahead now and type if there's any questions in terms of the facts, just to make sure everybody understands the questions. Okay, Bezalel, that's correct. Purim celebrates the Jews fighting against us as an attempt to physically eradicate us, whereas Hanukkah celebrates the Jews fighting in an attempt to eradicate our spirituality. Correct. That explains why those two holidays are unique. There was no need for overlap once we had Purim. So we want to be thankful to God for sparing us physically. And Hanukkah celebrates the concept of where we were not, our Judaism was not taken away from us. Okay, let me just see Tebby's question. Are there any references to Hanukkah, military victory of the Jews, and candle miracle on the Greek side or Gentile side in general? Well, actually, before we started the class, there's actually something called the Megillah Antiochus. Maybe somebody will remind me at the end of the class. There's a whole document that was written about this, and it was found in an ancient Greek prayer book. And the rabbi who has it's in circulation today, it's called Otsar Tefilos, he mentions how it's a precious letter. So evidently the rabbis, the great rabbis that we have, the ones that are commentators on the Torah, state that that's a very accurate account. Okay, Yochanan in Montana. Is it true that bris milah was one of the prescribed laws of the Greeks against the Jews during this period? Yes. They wanted to nullify three things. Shabbos observance, keeping the Sabbath. The new moon was the second one. And circumcision was the third that they wanted to nullify. Zechariah in Mexico. The main war was against the Greeks. They were the ones that were imposing their religion on the Jews. Stan, yes. Bris Milah was prohibited by the Greeks. Okay, Kimberly, it is about storing up enough oil that when the time comes. Okay, very good. All right, Yochanan, I didn't know that you moved from Missouri to Montana. I hope the move went well. Okay. Again, let's just make sure everybody has the questions. If you do have the questions and they're clear, you can just type an okay in the window. If a fact is not clear, please ask it. And then we'll move on to hearing what your possibilities are. That could be, Stan. I'm not familiar with that fact, that the Hellenized Jews joined the Greeks in the struggle. It may very well be. Glad you enjoyed that, Yochanan. Yes, actually, the rabbi state, I heard from my rabbi himself, that whenever they started, in the olden times, whenever the rabbis would start a class, they'd start it off with a joke. And the reason they did that was because it put their students in a very good state of mind, and then they were more attentive to listening to the actual class or whatever the topic was. Charity, I don't know that Antiochus claimed to be a god. Actually, they were the ones that served Dagon. That was the god that they had. So I don't think Antiochus claimed to be a god. Okay, Daryl from New York. Good to see you able to join the class. We're just asking a few questions in terms of the holiday. Okay, Basalo, very good question. Why do we celebrate 8 days? Okay, we'll get to that in the answer portion, and maybe you want to think about that yourself to see if you can pose a possibility. Because you're right. I mean, why can't we do, like, Purim is 1 day. So why don't we have Hanukkah as 1 day as well? Just have 1 day where you light one candle or 8 candles. What's this concept of going on 8 days? It's true that the oil lasted 8 days. So think about what the possibility might be. Yochanan, I already gave you the Hanukkah humor. Okay. Okay, so if everybody has the questions, let's do this now, just to make sure I'm getting feedback from you. Okay, let's just a few more questions here. Lizzie in New York, you're asking why the menorah is lit at night? No, that's not what we're asking. We're asking why the menorah is what we use to celebrate Hanukkah. I mean, whenever we have a holiday, it was precisely formulated by the rabbis. And we noticed that the actual event where the Jews were spared from losing their Judaism was the victory of the war. The lighting of the oil didn't do anything to save their Judaism. So if that's true, so why don't we celebrate Hanukkah instead of lighting a menorah? Why don't we hang a sword in the window? Or something which is reminiscent of the war? That's the question. Okay, Jack, it's true that it took 8 days to make pure oil, but that would not necessitate... It wouldn't necessarily necessitate that the holiday should go on. I mean, there were a number of days for certain events by Purim as well, but we see there's only 1 day of recalling what took place, of the miracles that God did. All right, Chaim from Israel, and Miriam, since you just logged on, just type in audio okay, just let us know that you can hear everything fine. We're a little bit into the class already, but we'll repeat the questions before we answer them. Okay, Yochanan, good to see you chiming in with the humor. And I would definitely opt for the latter. Okay, so now at this point, let's just make sure everybody has the questions. Just type OK. Everybody who's got the questions clear, type an OK into the window, and then we'll move on to possible answers that you have. Thank you, Miriam. Chaim in Israel, thank you. Okay, Jules, good. That's a good question. But actually, talking about milchiks and fleishiks, whether we have... thank you, Risa in New Jersey. Thank you, Joseph. Moshe, Renee, thank you. There is a custom that we eat cheese. Because Yehudis had... what happened was, one of the aspects of the Greek oppression was that the emperors in the local cities would forcibly have intercourse with the Jewish women. And when it came time for Yehudis to come in, she had a ploy, and she brought a lot of cheese and gave it to this oppressive Grecian emperor. And I guess the cheese was very potent back then. It caused him to be a little lightheaded. And at that moment, she took his head off. Now, because of that, we have a custom to have dairy products on Hanukkah. You don't have to have only dairy products, but it's a custom to actually partake of it. Okay, but now let's just make sure everybody has a question. So again, one last time, everybody just type an OK if you have all the questions. And then I'd like to move on and see if you have some possibilities. You could do that as well right now. If anybody has a possibility on any of the questions, you can give an answer. And what I'll do is one more time, I'll just repeat the questions to you. So again, what was the reasoning why Hanukkah was established as opposed to any other war that we had miracles involved in? I mean, what was qualitatively distinct about Hanukkah? And that was a holiday that the rabbis deemed fit to be set up as a holiday. That was an event, a war of miracles, that was deemed necessary. Land, New Jersey, yes. In terms of the oil was only enough for one night, but it lasted 8 nights. That's true. But we have to get to more specific reasoning why they felt that that should be necessary in our performance. Okay, Leah? Alright, Yochanan, you know what you can do. Since you have the five questions written down, maybe you want to type them into the window. This way everybody can see them visually. Or that might be helpful. Okay, the Hasmoneans were the people that lived in that era. Were the Jews that lived in that era. Actually, I retract. I'm not sure if it was Jews or the other. That was the name of the people that lived during that era in history. Actually, it was the Jews. Yeah, the Hasmoneim. Okay, Leah, why don't you type your question in again? If I didn't get your question clear. Let me just wait for Leah to type in the question. Yochanan, hold on a second in terms of typing the five questions. I just want to see what Leah, I want to address her question. Barry, you're mentioning that the sixth day, I'm assuming you mean the sixth day of creation, and Yom Kippur were also miracles. All right, if you want to explain what you mean... Okay, Yochanan, thanks. Okay. Leah, while you're typing it, let me just verbally mention the questions again. So again, number one, why was Hanukkah selected as a holiday and no other wars that had miracles? Number two, why do we use candles as our act of performance as opposed to something more germane to the war, like carrying a sword around or something of that nature? Why was... the holiday only established after they found that the oil lasted miraculously. I mean, we were successful in the war, so why don't we just make the holiday at that point? But they didn't until they found that the oil lasted miraculously. What does that have to do with the war? I can't go into that now, Basal. I don't have the exact dates on that either. So I'm sorry I can't answer that question. Let's just stick to the questions on the class. All right? Okay, let me just see if Leah had written. Okay, now, Leah's question. Why isn't Hanukkah celebrated the way other holidays are celebrated, with challah and kiddush? Well, when you have challah, that means you have a meal. And the sanctity of the day usually is what necessitates a certain type of meal. Or by Purim, you have a meal because of the bodily salvation, so we celebrate in a bodily manner. But holidays that are restricted in terms of work, they have a higher sanctification. And therefore, meal is demanded. Hanukkah doesn't have that. There's no prohibition to work on Hanukkah, although the rabbis do say that a woman should not work while the candles are lit. That is something which a woman should be careful to do, to observe. This was something which was given the rights to the women to have a demonstration of the sanctity of the day. Therefore, women should not do any type of labor while the candles are lit. But in terms of why there's no challah or kiddush, is because kiddush, when you recite kiddush, the word kiddush means to sanctify. So that means the day has to have a certain amount of prohibition of labor. That's what we define as sanctification. And when we don't have any type of prohibition of labor, there's no kiddush. There's no taking a cup of wine, sort of like toasting to the day. So we don't do that in Hanukkah. Okay, so we have a few questions there. Leah, I hope that answered your question. Okay, and also we have the question of why do we have Yochanan, actually. Yochanan, if you'd like, you could type in the rest of the questions now, just so everybody can see them on screen. If everybody could hold off on the questions, Yochanan is going to do us a favor and just put the questions on screen so you could see them visually. That would definitely be, it would assist us. Thank you, Yochanan. But I'll continue. And then we had the question of why we have this idea that if Hanukkah can be celebrated by one candle each night, what's this concept of having a beautification aspect? I mean, very few mitzvahs have this. Very few commands have this idea of a beautification. But Hanukkah has that. We can increase the lights each night. Plus, we can increase the members of the household at light. Okay, Lizzie, it's true that oil was lasting such a long time was an obvious miracle. What do you mean by that? Elaborate, because now you're getting on to the answer. I'd like to hear what you want to say on that. Okay, Jules in New York is suggesting the following. The problem with the war is that the Hasmoneans, the Hashmonaim, as happens with many people with power, soon abused it. The pure meaning was the events of the temple. The war was a necessity. Okay, you're getting on to the answer too. Very good. Just clarify. Gershon in New York, good to see you. Just type audio okay. Make sure that you can hear the sound. I'd like to make sure everybody is benefiting from the class. Shmuel in Kansas, good to see you too. I mean, an additional question we could also ask, and Yochanan, you could add this to your list, why don't we just have the holiday celebrated that year, or the year after the event, you know, those few thousand years ago, and no longer? What is the concept of us celebrating it today? Okay, Gersh, thank you very much. Gershon, excuse me. What's this concept of us having to celebrate? In general, the idea, we can ask just a general question, by Passover, by Purim, by Hanukkah, all these different days that are based on events. Shavuos, receiving the Torah. Sukkos, we commemorate the fact that God caused us to dwell in huts when he took us out of Egypt. What is this concept of having a continual celebration? And also the last question we had was, what was greater about the war of Hanukkah as opposed to other wars that Hanukkah demanded to be instituted? Okay, Shmuel, Kansas, good to see you. Okay, Bitzal, you're suggesting that the derivation of the name Hanukkah, that they rested on the 25th. Okay, you have to elaborate on that. Okay, Zachariah is suggesting a good answer, that the reason why we have Hanukkah every year is because the influence of the Chag, meaning the holiday, comes back every year. What Zechariah means is that we are directly affected by God's salvation in all those events. and as well as not only when God spared us, but when he took us out of Egypt, which was definitely an act of sparing us and redeeming us, but it was a redemption for an objective, which was the next holiday of Shavuos, receiving the Torah on Sinai. That's something which benefits all generations. So that's the concept of having a continuing celebration for every Jew that ever would come into existence, because every Jew down the line is directly affected by the good that God had done in previous years. And that's what Sarah and Israel are saying. They tried to eradicate Judaism, but we are still here, and therefore we should celebrate it. Correct. Okay. Lizzie in New York is giving a very good answer. She's suggesting, why is Hanukkah selected as a holiday as opposed to all other ones? So she's suggesting that the oil was something which was completely against nature. Okay, but I would answer to you, Lizzie, well, when Joshua caused the sun and the moon, well, he didn't cause it, when he prayed to God for the sun and the moon to stand still in Gibeon and in the valley of Ayalon, those were also undeniable miracles. So you couldn't use that answer here. Otherwise, that event with Joshua would also demand a holiday to be enacted on behalf of those clear miracles. Yeah, Yochanan, the sixth question, somebody already answered it. Why we celebrate Hanukkah as opposed to just letting the Jews back then celebrate it? Why does it have to be perennial? Why does it have to continue throughout all generations? All right, so let's take the questions now and see if we could suggest some answers here. Unless anybody wants to just take a look at the questions that Yochanan just put on screen. All right, he did it as question 1, Q2, Q3. Take a look. It's the third to the last entry on screen right now. So take a look at the third to the last entry Yochanan from Missouri had put on. This way you can just remind yourself of the questions. And let's just think about it for a few moments. And then I'd like to, because the whole goal of learning, as the Gemara says, the Talmud says, the goal of learning, whether it's Torah, whether it's Talmud, Mishnah, is thought, is clarity of thought, and thinking into the matter, and then opening up the whole area of wisdom. So look at the questions, and let's pause for a minute, and let's everybody think about the questions and see if you could think of possible answers. Okay, Leah, I hear what you're saying. All right, so let's everybody hold off on the typing in the chat for just a moment. If you have a possibility, feel free to type it in. All right, Charity, bring up the question after the class. So we'll have a question and answer session after the class. And we'll open it up to questions on any topic as well. So let's just take a few moments to think about the questions. Okay, Gershon in New York, the questions are, if you go up from where your entry is, you'll see Yochanan in Missouri, and then again, from where your entry is, go up 5 entries from Yochanan in Missouri, Yochanan-MO, and then you'll see a larger entry, and he listed the questions. Actually, what I'll do is, why don't I help you out, and I'm going to type them in. This way they'll be in red. Everybody can see them. Okay, Gershon, you can take a look at the bottom of the screen. We just copied and pasted what Gershon, what Yochanan typed. So if everybody wants to take a look at the screen now, you can see it more clear what the questions are. So just a few moments, we'll start taking answers, unless you have possibilities. If you have possibilities that come to mind now, feel free to type them in. Anybody who's typing in now, anybody who just entered now, excuse me, we're just pausing so everybody can consider the questions that are highlighted in red on the screen. Okay, we'll get to that in a second, Yochanan. Let me just pause. I want to give time for everybody to think about the questions. Yes, Yochanan, correct. In the Shema, since you just logged on, Dawn in Canada and Jerry in Connecticut, just take a look at the red highlighted questions. That's what we're thinking about right now, and then we'd like to hear possibilities from everybody. Dan in Pennsylvania and Arnold in, it's Louisiana. We're just pondering the questions right now that are in red on the screen. You can take a look. Okay, Gershon, I agree with what you typed. Gersh is suggesting that this was really a military action, but the sages chose to commemorate it via the miracle. In reality, the whole story was a miracle. So explain to me, why is it that they chose one miracle over the other in terms of commemoration? We commemorate it today by lighting the menorah. We don't do anything in terms of our fulfillment that is demonstrative of the war. That has to be a reason why they selected the oil aspect. And as somebody mentioned earlier, well, that was an overt miracle where the war, you can't really look at the war and see the miracle going on. But to that, I responded that you had many overt miracles with wars in history, yet those events did not warrant a holiday. So it has to be something in the Hanukkah event itself that did. Okay, Donnie, that's a good point. Okay, any other... Take one more minute, one or two more minutes, just think about the questions, and then we'll proceed to the answers. And again, once we conclude the class, we'll put the file online, so this way if you missed any part of it, or if you have to leave early, you'll be able to listen to the entire class at a convenient time. Dawn, Canada? Yes, as far as you understand it, the temple was rededicated after it was desecrated. Correct. But that doesn't... I'm not sure if you're trying to answer the question. Maybe you want to elaborate on why you're saying that. Are you trying to answer the question? Okay, good approach, Gershon. You're writing that there must be something specific about the oil, maybe due to the overt attempt of the Greeks to make the temple impure by ruining the oil. All right? It was a miracle that any oil at all was found. Well, that I don't know. The real miracle that the rabbis say is that an oil that can only burn for one day burned for 8 days. Okay, so I'll just give you a few more seconds if anybody wants to type a possibility. Otherwise, I'd like to proceed and offer you some possible answers to our questions. Okay, so let's proceed to some answers that I think might address these questions. Let me see what Jerry is writing. There are several issues with the oil. It was found intact and burned longer than usual to make more. So there are multiple miracles. Correct. This is true, but there were many miracles with other wars as well. You have to really show how there's something in Hanukkah which is not found anywhere else. To suggest that there are miracles, even many miracles, we have many miracles in other wars. So just because there's a multiplicity of miracles, that's not something we see demanded. Even the quality of the miracle, the sun and the moon standing still in the days of Joshua. All right, we see then that no holiday was established based on that, even though that was quite a spectacular miracle. Okay, but Salah, you're suggesting the Hanukkah celebrates that Hashem makes miracles and not humans. So the victory over the Greeks is a victory over physical gods and is brought about by the oil. Again, you're not showing how... Well, let me just see. Your idea is that God makes miracles and not humans. Well, that's the case with all miracles. And there were other cases with God. I mean, in Egypt, God had destroyed all the Egyptian gods, it says. Jack, yes, it has to do with the temple. It has to do with the oil, because that's what we see, according to the Talmud and also Maimonides, that until the miracle of the oil took place, they did not establish a holiday merely based on the military victory. dawn in Canada? That's correct. Those are the facts. God allowed and made a miracle that the oil should last 8 days. But that alone, why would that warrant a holiday? Again, there were other miracles in other wars. Okay, let me pose a possibility over here. One distinct characteristic of the miracle of the oil was that it was not necessary for the salvation of the Jews. The Jews had already triumphed over their enemies. Now, what happened was, after the victory, they were going to go back, rededicate the temple, and if they couldn't light the oil for 8 days because they only had 1 day's worth, well, there's a principle in the Torah, which is onus rachmana patre. That means to say, one who is coerced and something is out of his control, he is not held accountable. He is exempt. So the Kohanim, the priests, were exempt from not being able to light the menorah, had they not been able to for those 8 days, or the 7 days left. But what happened was that even after their salvation, then a new miracle took place. This I believe to be the reason why Hanukkah was selected over all other events where there were miracles. It's true, many events had miracles. But those miracles were all necessary for the military victory. When Joshua was fighting against the enemies, he didn't want it to, it was a Friday, and he didn't want to be fighting on the Sabbath, so he asked God to let the day be longer. And that was done for the sake of the military victory. The same thing when he took over the city of Jericho, and the walls sunk into the ground in a miraculous fashion. Nobody denied. And they sunk because the priests had blasted 7 times on the shofar. I mean, how does blasting 7 times on a ram's horn cause a city's wall to sink miraculously into the ground? Well, that's impossible, naturally. Nonetheless, that was necessary for the war, for the military aspect. However, Hanukkah has a miracle that was not necessary. The duration of the oil was not necessary in terms of the victory. Therefore, the rabbi saw this as being something not necessary for salvation, and therefore they looked at that as being God implying through doing this miracle that there's something distinct about this event. Okay, everybody have that? Just type an okay on the screen if you have that. If not, I'll repeat the answer. If you have the distinction I'm making, just type an okay before we move on. Again, I'm saying that the miracle of Hanukkah, of the oil, was not necessary for the war. Whereas all other cases of war, the wars that had miracles, those miracles were essential to the actual battle. Where this miracle took place after the Jews were already victorious. So I'm saying that the rabbis must have understood that to mean that God was now implying this is a different type of a day. This demands that we have to give thanks to God and recall this day every single year. And Jules, it's not really incidental because it's a miracle. A miracle can't be incidental by nature. By very definition, a miracle is something which God is doing. And he's doing something which is not even necessary for the salvation. Therefore, the rabbi saw this as being different, and it stands apart from all of the holidays. Okay, Joel, thank you. Zachariah, Lou, Jeanne, South Carolina, Jules, New York, Miriam, Tzvi, Dawn, very good. Okay. Sarah in Israel, good. Tzvi in Missouri. Charity, very good. Jack, very good. Okay, just want to make sure everybody's got the suggestion. You see the distinction clearly. Everybody sees the distinction clearly? That's true, Gersh. I don't disagree with you. Well, Sima, I mean, in many cases, they're very, you know, there's a desire to serve God. But God stepped in with a miracle. That means God was now endorsing the rabbis to do something different here. Jewels, that's a good enough distinction for me. That's something which is a distinction that's a qualitative. It's not a minor distinction. If God does a miracle, it can't be minor. All right. Now let's move on to the other questions. So now we could ask the question about why would God do this? I mean, we can't know God's motives, and again, God is not human, so he doesn't have something called motive. We are limited by our own understanding of you know how we function. So the best we can say is that there's definitely a God has a desire for man, that it's his will that this oil should have lasted, and that we should recognize the miraculous aspect of it. Okay. Now, in terms of why God would make this miracle, we can, and then what the rabbis actually followed suit with. So we had our other question. One other question we had is why do we celebrate by lighting the candles? I mean, why can't we still do something to represent the war? See, the reasoning is winning the war is fine. That saves us. However, what was the objective? The objective during this event was that Judaism was reestablished and it was not lost from the people. What demonstrates that Judaism was the objective? That's the menorah. When they went back into the temple and they reestablished and reinaugurated the temple to go back to God's commanded worship in the temple, that was the first step in terms of realigning themselves back to an uninhibited and unoppressed Judaism. So what we want to demonstrate is that the whole objective of the war was not just to have bodily or salvation or just to win over our enemies. No, that's only a means for the ultimate goal, and that's to be back in line with the Torah system. How do we demonstrate that this was the objective of the whole Hanukkah event? By the rabbis ordained that we should have the Hanukkah Neros, the candles should be the mechanism by which we perform the mitzvah. By doing that, we now focus each year, for these 8 days, we focus in on what the real objective is, and that's being in line with the Torah system. Alright? Doesn't matter what branch of Judaism you're from, everybody agrees, and we have it by proof, historical proof, that God gave it Torah system. He gave these five books, and he gave the oral law, and this is his will for mankind, and it's for our benefit. So therefore, we look at what the objective of the war is, and that's how we celebrate Hanukkah today, by using the menorah. So the menorah now embodies the whole objective of us being realigned with the Torah system. That's really what the ultimate goal of the war is, and that's why we perform it today with the menorah. Okay? Hope that's clear. Okay, so you can just type an okay into the window, just to make sure that everybody has the answer to that second question. Yochanan, I'm not sure what you're getting at. Let's take that after afterwards. You're quoting the prophets over there. Let's just make sure everybody has the answers now. All right, thank you. Seema, Lou, Dawn, Miriam, Gian, thank you. Okay, so now we understand the distinction of the holiday was that there was a miracle that was not necessary for the military victory, yet God still made a miracle subsequent when it wasn't even needed for our salvation, that the rabbis recognized as being important. And now we understand that this was done. We could guess why this was done by God. He wanted to underline that this is the real objective of the war, that we can now be back in line with the Torah system. Therefore, the rabbis looked at the oil as underlining this concept, and they established the actual performance in a format where we are embodying the realignment with the Torah system, and that was the menorah. The menorah was the first thing that they did. Okay, now this is for Lizzie. The war was not superfluous. Okay, because that was still necessary. I mean, it reflected on the war as well. We don't say that the oil was the only miracle. We say that the oil underlined the fact that God was involved in the war as well. I mean, without the war, once the Jews revolted, then they were putting their lives at stake. So we would have been wiped out physically as well, even though their original attempt was just to Hellenize us. Okay. Now, we also mentioned earlier that in the prayers, we say this something called Al HaNisim, that we add in during the 8 days of Hanukkah. And the Al HaNisim means to say, on the miracles. We thank you for the miracles. But we don't mention anything about the miracle of the oil. So if the oil is so essential, as we're saying now, let me just see what Gershon's writing before I go further. Yes, yes, Gershon, correct. That's why we have those two holidays. We'll get to that point. But getting back to what we're saying now in the Al HaNisim, so why is it in the prayers, if we're saying now that the oil is the essential aspect, the miracle by which Hanukkah was established, and without the oil miracle, we would not have established a holiday, why is it that in our prayers, which are an essential part of every day of our lives, so which we recite three times a day for a man, one time a day for women, minimum, why is it that when we recall Hanukkah in our daily prayers and we put in that paragraph, why is that paragraph not saying a word about the oil? Okay, keep in mind, it's a prayer of thanks. So I want you to think about this now. Let's stop for a minute. Think about this question. Now that you understand that the oil was something which was essential to establishing the holiday, so that would seem to be, it would have to be permeating every one of our religious aspects. Right? Not just the lighting, but if we recite something in our prayers, or when we say the grace after meals, why is it that that insertion for Hanukkah doesn't have any mention of oil, if we're saying the oil is so essential? So let's just stop, you know, pause for a minute and think about that question. Why is the prayer of thanks only talk about the war? And it doesn't say a thing about the oil. The reason why we're making a big deal about the two events, let me just read you a question so everybody hears it. Jules is writing, the near-term objective of the war was survival. The restoration of the temple was the longer-term objective. Why make so much of one and not the other? Why are you making such a big point out of two events being different? Why does it even matter to make such a distinction? Well, it matters to understand why the rabbis, who had the rights to ordain our religious practice, why they set up the laws this way. If you study the Talmud, you'll see that there's so much conversation, discussion, before a law is actually concretized and then established for future generations. So the whole study, the whole purpose of Torah, by the way, the most important command in Torah is not the performances, but the study. Meaning, like I said earlier, the whole objective of our existence is to be involved in thought and appreciate God's wisdom. He created the world merely as a means for us to look at the physical universe and to appreciate the great wisdom that's enclosed. 2,448 years after God created the world, he gave a Torah system with tremendous concepts, but it takes a certain amount of derivation because you're talking about God's wisdom. Therefore, you have to delve into the matter. And then by delving in and analyzing and using Talmudic thought, you start to uncover new ideas. That's the way the Torah was written, in a very cryptic fashion. It can be read on many levels, and as a person advances, he can see even deeper ideas. And that's really the objective, is to see the depth of God's wisdom and to see the beauty of the ideas. So when we see the rabbis are formulating this, our goal right now is not simply to light the candles, but to delve into how they've precisely formulated these laws. And by doing so, we start to understand their distinctions and a great amount of wisdom. And that's something which really fills a person's soul in terms of giving us the most meaningful life and gives us the proper ideas and morality to live by. So we always make a big fuss about all the different distinctions that may seem minor on the surface. Okay, Yochanan wants to suggest, he says, a prayer of thanks for victory in war seems appropriate. However, a prayer that does not also give thanks for God's spirit represented by the oil to be a light unto nations. Its omission by our sages seems inadequate. Does it not? Okay, that's our question, Yochanan. Why is it that we're omitting some reference where God did this miracle of the oil? I'm not sure I understand what you're writing, Jules. Gersh, Gershon, New York. Why no mention of the miracle of oil al nisim? It must be based on what tefillah is for, to glorify Hashem. Was this easier to see in the war? Well, tefillah is not necessarily to glorify Hashem. Unless you mean to say that we're praising God, that we're reminding ourselves of God's greatness. That's true, then I agree. If that's what you mean, glorify Hashem. Meaning, for ourselves, to understand God's greatness, we have to reiterate the tefillah every day. But that's only the first three. The middle section of tefillah are requests. We ask God for things we need. And the last three are categories as thanks. So this insertion in Hanukkah belongs in the last section, which is all about thanks to God. So the question is, why in the prayer of thanks do we omit anything about the oil? Okay, sorry you lost your sound. Okay, if anybody else, let's just see. Is having a, let's just make sure everybody can hear the sound. If everybody can hear the sound, just type it okay. Let me just tell Sarah to leave and re-enter, so this way she could rejoin us. Okay. So now let's understand about the Alanis. Let me just see if Sarah comes back and could join us. So if both are synergistic jewels, I don't understand, so they should work together and be part of Alanism. All right, so if you're saying that, let's see, Shlomo. Shlomo is saying, what about the discussion that Hanukkah is really a celebration of Sukkot Leit, which couldn't be celebrated due to the temple not being usable at Sukkot. I'm not sure what you're getting at. Okay, Zechariah, very good. Zechariah is making a point. Zechariah is saying, could it be that we thank Hashem for the war and we praise Him for the miracle? Okay. Let's just concentrate. Since we're saying that the last section of our prayers every day is called the prayers of thanks, quote-unquote thanks, and this is where we insert the mention of Hanukkah, which does not say anything about the oil. Therefore, we have to understand, what is it that we're thankful for? See, thanks is something which had to do with God saving us. But having a miracle of oil is not something to thank God for. You understand? What we thank for is in terms of the victory, that we went ahead and we risked our lives, and nonetheless God saved us even physically. Because when you go to war, your enemy is definitely going to defend themselves by killing you. Right? Initially, they just wanted to Hellenize us, but then stripping us of Judaism was not tolerated by Matasyahu's five sons, and Yochanan initiated it by killing the emperor in his area, and then he joined together with his four brothers, and they went ahead and they battled against tens of thousands, and they were successful. So, let me just see the point. The point is that, yes, I'm sorry, just got off track. The idea is that in terms of thanks, we are thankful for that which spared us. But the oil didn't do anything for us. The oil was something that God did to underline the objective. And then the rabbis instituted the holiday based on that. So the miracle of the oil was not, it had nothing to do with the salvation. As we said earlier, it was subsequent to the war. So it was out of the category, it was completely out of the category of salvation. So therefore, that is not something that we thank. So therefore, when we talk about the statements that we make on Hanukkah, that we thank God for certain things, we thank Him for that which we benefited as individuals. All right, so that was our lives. That was our lives. But in terms of the practice has to embody the objective. So our objective is to be realigned with the Torah system. That's why the actual fulfillment, the formulation of our command, is to do something which embodies the reinauguration of the temple. Okay, if you see that distinction, just type an okay on screen. All right, we just have a few more questions, and then we're going to open it up to questions on any topic. Okay, so if you hear the distinction, please type OK on your screen. All right, thank you, Miriam, Basalo, Seema. Gershon, yes, we do thank Hashem for the miracles every day in the blessing of thanks. But when you have something which is elevated to this point of distinction, it needs its own recognition. That's why you have the Ahanisim insertion. All right, Brian, Lou, Jian, Yochanan, thank you, good. Okay, glad we got the distinction. Okay. And I just want to underline that not only was Hanukkah, like a number of you had mentioned this accurate point earlier, that the reason why we only have these two holidays and nothing else was set up after the Torah is because these are the two that embody the two areas of salvation. Bodily salvation was celebrated by Purim, and our spiritual salvation is celebrated by Hanukkah. So that's, therefore, there's nothing left to be celebrated. And in line with this idea that we just said, that the whole objective of Hanukkah was to realign ourselves with the Torah system, I'm going to show you that this is also the objective by Purim too. Even though God saved us bodily and he spared us from being killed, it says in the Megillah that we read on Purim, the words, Kimu v'kiblu, mashu kiblu kavara, the Jews rose up and accepted that which they accepted originally, meaning it's referring to the acceptance of the Torah. But in Purim, they rose up and re-accepted the Torah. What does that mean? It means at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, when we got the Torah, so there was a certain amount of coercion. We couldn't deny the fact of this miracle. It was just completely undeniable that God is revealing his system to us. We see the proof of God's existence. He causes a voice to come out of a mountain that's totally on fire. And we can go into that at a later point, why God composed the miracle, why he orchestrated the miracles at Sinai to be a voice coming out of a mountain on fire. Why was that what God composed the miracle? Why he orchestrated the miracle? But nonetheless, the Jews accepted the Torah at Sinai, the rabbis say, out of a certain amount of coercion. Because it was undeniable. And it actually says that the Jews ran away from Sinai like children leaving school. Because it was a whole new system that was definitely a certain amount of oppression that they now had to do this. There was no way out, and they had a lot of new laws. There was a lot of prohibitions, sexually, in terms of eating, and many base drives were now going to be contained by the system. But what happened by the time of Purim, the Jews saw how the ingenuity of both Mordechai and Esther, how they orchestrated the salvation of the Jews. And when they saw how these brilliant Torah-observant Jews used their cunning and their Torah wisdom to save all the Jews, that imbued all the rest of the Jews in that era with a great love for the Torah. So although they accepted the Torah years and decades and millennia earlier, that was accepted out of a certain amount of coercion, but now they accepted it out of a love. And that's something which we see Purim also. So not only was Hanukkah something which had an objective of the realignment with the Torah system, Purim also had that. Okay. All right, so now we understand that Purim actually has an idea which this concept of being realigned with the Torah system is not only by Hanukkah, but by Purim as well. All right, now the other questions we had, we answered why this was greater miracle than others, because it wasn't the greater, but it was the fact that the miracle was not necessary for the war. So they understood that to establish the holiday. And we explained also why Hanukkah and Purim are the only two holidays made subsequent to the Torah. We also explained why we celebrate today, because we are directly affected by God's goodness and his kindness to the Jews back then. Had it not been for all the miracles that God had done for our forefathers, we would not have the system today, and we would not benefit. So therefore, we must celebrate. Now, our last question, I believe we had only one more question, and that is this concept of beautification. Let me just take jewels for a second before we go further. If your logic is right, then why glorify both the physical exodus and the giving of the law? One was necessity and the other is added. Both are really necessary. What is the big point of making these distinctions? Again, I'm not sure I understand. If your logic is right, then why glorify both the physical exodus and the giving of the law? One was necessity and the other's added. Okay, that's a good question. Not for now, Jules. That's definitely a good question. Why we celebrate Passover as Exodus if that was merely a means for accepting the Torah? Okay. I mean, there's a lot to it. I mean, briefly, you could say that Passover also demonstrated God as being the true God, and all the Egyptians were false. But the fact that God emancipates us and gives us freedom, that is a very important effect. I mean, being 210 years slaves in Egypt and then being freed by God's miracles is a very, very important event. All right? And then receiving the law has its own objective. Okay, but there is, definitely very good grounds why God said that you should have this holiday year in and year out. Okay. Now, the last question we had is this concept of our actual practice. Because we asked if you could really fulfill your command of just one candle each night. So then what is this concept? And also somebody asked earlier, why do we light for 8 days? All right, that'll be part of the answer now. But if we have our fulfillment taken care of with just one candle each night, why do we have this additional beautification concept of not only having one person light, but actually the head of the household? I mean, just to stop for a point, the head of the household is the one who lights. And I'd like to elaborate on that for a minute, because from the essential law is that the head of the household is the one that lights. Why is that? Let me give you another question before we go to the other. We have one last answer, but let me give you one more question again, since the objective is to think into the area. Why would you say that the rabbis formulated that the head of the household is the one who should light? And this is talking about the scenario when you just have one candle each night, meaning the minimal act for fulfilling the mitzvah. So why do they formulate it? Why can't it just be anybody in the household? I mean, on Shabbos, when you sanctify and you say Kiddush over the cup of wine every Friday night, anybody can say the Kiddush. But why, by Hanukkah, did they say, no, the house head must be the one? So let's think about this for a minute or two. All right, Nissim in New York, hope you're doing good. Good to see you online. Think about the question. I'd love to hear an answer if you have it. And Daryl, if you're online, definitely love to hear it too. Good to see you both. All right, everybody has a question. If you have the question clear, please type in an okay. Just so I know that we have that question. Yes, Lou. That's part of the beauty, the additional aspect, meaning there's two things in Jewish law. There's fulfilling the minimal requirement, but there are many laws that have a higher form of performance if you want to do that. So what we do today is a higher form, where everybody lights. And the children light too, but that's only in terms of education. Okay, Zachariah, good to see you. Again, we're continuing the class tomorrow, 1:30, same time. I'm hoping that this time is okay, but again, we're doing the class at 1:30. This way we can accommodate people on the West Coast, as well as those people who are coming in from Israel and in Europe. Okay, so everybody think about the question. Why is it the rabbis said that the head of the household should be the one who lights? And we understand, everybody lights today. We're not talking about how we do it today, but how they originally formulated it. Okay, Arnold, but that doesn't explain why the house head has to be the one that lights. You're welcome, Jack. Hope to see you again tomorrow. Okay, so what do you think? Why is that house head the one? Well, Alfred, in, I'm not sure if that's California or Canada. Yes, you could have, if you're not going to be home in time, so then your wife can light for you. She's equal in this command as a man. But if you are in home, any time while there's somebody still awake in the house, even if you come home at 3 in the morning, if there's somebody still awake in the house, you can light. And you should. If you're not going to be able to light, because maybe you're on the road, or you won't get home until everybody's sleeping, then you instruct your wife, or the wife can instruct the husband to have them in mind. But why is it the house head is the one? Anybody have a possibility? Think about this. What is the role in Judaism of the father, of the head of the household? What is his role in Judaism? Think about it that way. What is the role of the father, the head of the household, in Jewish life? Okay, Lizzie, very good. Lizzie in New York. Sima, very good. Right, meaning propagating Torah knowledge. Because the father, the males are the ones that are commanded in studying Torah, which does not mean the woman can't. The woman should definitely study. But since there are obligations of children, and this has taken a very big toll on the mother, so she's not given as many commands, because that wouldn't be just. But in terms of the commands that she has, and this is one of them, she should definitely be involved. But in terms of to perpetuate Torah, that's given to the man. He's the one that has to be involved in study and teaching. Now, since, this is the way I want to answer it, since, no, Miriam, he's not the one responsible for prayer. Every individual has to pray, Miriam. Okay? But everybody seems to be having the answer right away, which is very good. All right? Yeah, everybody prays for themselves, Miriam. That's something which has to be important. And that's actually what Jacob said to Rachel when Rachel said in the Torah, she said, give me children. And if not, then like a dead woman. So Jacob became very angry and said, am I in God's place that I should give you, that I have withheld children from you? Meaning to say, Jacob expressed anger at Rachel's thought that there's something outside of God that can help her have children. And this concept is a basic fundamental in Judaism, that there's no other source of power in the world except for God. Right? We can get into this at another date in terms of what people mean by demons, or what do we mean by spirituality, what do we mean by an angel, all these things we can talk about. But this is something which is not disputed by our sages, our Rishonim, our great rabbis. That everybody agrees there's no such thing as any cause for anything that functions in the world except for God. So therefore, Jacob wanted to teach Rachel that don't ask me for children, you must ask God. So everybody's prayer is his own, is the most important one. Now, in terms of the obligation of the man, see, everybody's correct. The man's obligation, the house head, is to perpetuate Torah. Now, what was happening back in the time of the Greeks? When they wanted to obliterate Judaism from our practice. And they actually wanted to remove our identity. No more circumcision, no more Sabbath observance, no more new moon observance. All these things conflicted with their idolatrous practices. See, they wanted to stop the system of Torah. They wanted to put an end to the system of Judaism. Therefore, what did the rabbis say? The rabbis said, all right, Yochanan, we'll be in touch. Good to see you, and thanks again for your help typing in. I look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. See, what the rabbis did was, they said, based on the fact that Judaism was a thing at stake, not people's lives during the temple, but since Judaism was at stake, how do we now embody that? They said, let the house head, let the one who's responsible for perpetuating Judaism, light that candle each night. See, they added another feature in the lighting of the light of the menorah that would also carry another aspect. So when we look at the lights and we see who's lighting it, oh, it's the househead, it's the father, all right? He's the head of the household, okay? So that's why he's the one that has the light. But what's his distinction? Perpetuating Judaism. And when we think about his role, now we recall, oh, that's what the Greeks were trying to do back then. They were trying to end the perpetuation of Judaism. So therefore, the rabbis wanted to imbue our practice today, not only with showing what was the objective of the war, to get back in line with the Torah system, which is embodied by the candelabrum, the menorah. That was the first thing that the priest did in terms of reestablishing the system of Torah after we won the war. So we use that as the objective to show what's the objective of Hanukkah, not the war, but the reestablishment of our religion. And now, what else they do? Now they say, besides doing that, but now you must have the house head be the one that lights, because that will now display the concept that what was being forfeited, what was being sacrificed, or that was the risk back then in the times of the Greeks, was that the system would be nullified. So therefore, we show, no, the system wasn't nullified. And how do we show that? The house head who perpetuates the system is very much intact, very much alive, and he's the one that lights in order to give us that aspect. Okay. Okay, the purpose, Jules, of this is to show the beauty of the system of Hanukkah, how the precision of the ideas is part of our practice, to show how the wisdom of the Torah is really what our focus must be. And we just look at practices without understanding them, then what use is there? But when we understand what we're doing, then we have a greater appreciation, and then we actually light the menorah tonight, all these ideas come together in our mind, they resonate, and then we have much more of an appreciation for God. Ultimately, our objective here is to have a thanks and a praise of what God did by these historically proven events, these miracles, and understanding how the rabbis formulated it show us the depth of Torah knowledge, and that gives us even greater appreciation for God's wisdom when we see how much knowledge is encapsulated in this simple practice. Now, let's take the last question. The last question is, why do we have this concept of everybody in the house lighting? If the minimal practice, this is the last question. The last question was, if we have the minimal practice, all that's really required is one candle each night, no matter how many people are in the house. But the rabbi said, if you want to beautify the mitzvah, get everybody to light. So if you have five people in your house, on day one, you have five candles. But not only that, on day two, there should be 10 candles. Meaning two things the rabbis added. That every member of the household should light, and that every member should increase their candles until the eighth day, when there's 40 candles lit. So the question is, why do they do that? That's the last question I'll put to you. Think about that. If you have a possibility, good. But for now, just everybody type OK. Make sure you have the last question clear before we go on to the answer. And then we'll open up. For anybody else who could stay online longer, we'll open up questions on any topic. And you know, I'm not professing to have the answers, but if I can, you know, we'll use that time to help you out with other questions too. But for right now, just type an OK on screen if everybody has the last question. Okay, Alfred, Sima, Jean, good. Miriam, Jules, Basalo. Okay, Basalo, you want me to repeat the question? Okay, Miriam, Shalom. The question is like this. If the minimal requirement of Hanukkah is to light one candle, no matter how many people are in your house, that's it, just one candle each night for 8 days, what is the idea behind the rabbi's law, their rabbinic enactment, to say that there's an additional concept of a beautification of this command? Not only could you light one and fulfill the primary objective, but if you want to beautify this command of lighting the lights, have everybody in the house light, not just one person, and also everybody should increase their candles each night. That's the question. Okay, Nisim, thanks. Lou, Brian, Charity, good. Okay, the question is clear. Everybody else, the question's clear. And keep in mind, you light tonight 42 minutes after sunset, no matter where you are. Okay, at the beginning of nightfall. Nightfall is equated as 42 minutes after sunset. So if sunset in the area is be like 4:30 or so, like it is like in New York time, so you'll be lighting at the 5:12. And then it should last, the duration of the light should last for as long as it takes for people to come home from work. This way you have the greatest proclamation of the miracle, because the more people seeing it, the greater amount of enhancement to the mitzvah there is. Well, Lou, it's not that you're sharing your oil. Somebody else can buy their own oil. So it's not a matter of sharing. The question is, again, why does everybody light if only one person, the head of the household, is sufficient? And why should everybody increase their candles each night? So if you have a possible answer, type it in. Otherwise, we'll continue. I'll give you the last answer of this session. David, New York, yes, is consistent to enhance, but it has to be an enhancement that makes sense. These enhancements are not subjective. We have to follow what the rabbis ordained as being enhancements, and then we have to understand why these two specific enhancements. What are the enhancements? How are you enhancing it? Just more lights? No, it's not a matter of making a bigger blaze in front of your house. Alfred, California, you're saying the meaning of the holiday is applicable to all, even children. Okay, true. You also said that everyone prays for himself. They also have to appreciate the miracle individually, too. How better to show appreciation than everyone light and increase the candles daily? Okay, that, I agree, Alfred, is the answer to one of the questions. Meaning to say, what Alfred is saying is like this. To show that more people are appreciating the miracle, meaning more people are affected by God's kindness. So how do we demonstrate that? If I walk by somebody's house and I see one candle, all right, very nice, I see one candle every night. But if I see five candles every night, I know that there are five members in the household. All right, on day eight, I see five candles. Well, I definitely know he's not lighting five as part of eight. He would have lit eight candles if he's trying to express the day. But if I see five candles lit on the eighth day, or five candles lit on the first day, now I know that there must be five members in the household. That imparts to me the realization of how many more people were affected by God's kindness. So that's one answer. Okay? What about increasing the candles? Why do we increase the candles? See, we increase the candles, what do you think? Not only does everybody light, but we go up in the amount of candles each one of us lights each night. What are we doing by increasing the candles? That we go up on the eighth day, that we finally each light eight candles. What do you think? Why do we increase the candles? Anybody have an idea? Type it in if you have an idea. Nissen wants to say traversing levels. You got to expound on that. It's too general. Seema, you want to say we're increasing godliness. You have to explain. Think about what the number is. What do we increase up to? We go up to eight. What is eight reminiscent of on Hanukkah? Think about it. Leah, the same thing I'm going to say to you. What does eight have to do? We could say a lot here. The question is, what must we say? Not what can we say as an answer. We always want to look for an answer which is mandated by the content that we're studying. Okay, Lou in New York wanted to write like this. It is meant to convey the specific message of the increase of the miracle, as the one day supply of oil continued to burn and burn for 8 days. In a general sense, though, it expresses the Jewish concept of ambition. Okay, that's getting into a little philosophy over here. What you first said is correct. The 8 days, where we're increasing our number of candles, because what are we doing when we light the menorah? We're doing something called proclaiming the miracle, publicizing the miracle. Okay? How do we publicize the miracle? Well, we could publicize it just that there was a miracle. Well, that would be one candle each night. We could also publicize another aspect, that God's miracle affected many people. Oh, so then we have each member of the household light. So this way, when I walk by my friend's house again tonight, and I see not just one candle, but I see five candles in five different windows, now I know there must be five people. So that adds and embellishes by adding a new aspect of what the miracle did. It saved five people that are alive today and gave them Judaism too. Okay? But if we increase the candles, not only are we saying that there was an event with one candle, not only are we saying that many people are affected with five candles, but by day eight, when we see 40 candles, what we realize is that there was a duration of this miracle that lasted 8 days, which is what Lou just said. All right, so now it gives us an added component of the story. All right, so not only is there... So with this last point, what we're going to end on here, until we open up the questions for, you know, other topics. But the point is that you see that there are many facets that can be publicized. One facet is just the mere event of Hanukkah. Okay, that's one candle each night. If I want to show how many people are affected, I light for that number of people in the house. And if I want to show more about the content of the event, then I'm going to ascend the number of candles each day to show that it illustrates in our windows, it illustrates another aspect that you couldn't derive just by looking at one candle. Looking at one candle each night, okay, very nice. Maybe it was the same thing every day. No, but there was a miracle each day. Each day contained a new miracle. Therefore, the eight candles that we see on the eighth night tell me this when I look at it. So you see how the rabbis orchestrated the command in such a fashion that there's a tremendous amount of knowledge just by looking at it. Okay. Let's just see what Leah and Sima are writing. Leah writes, it is intertwined with the concept of the consecration of Abraham and becoming a people of Hashem. I wouldn't say that. I don't see where the connection is between the 8 days of Hanukkah and the 8 days of the Bris. Unless you could show me somewhere where that is clear. But this would seem to be that was just the nature of oil didn't get pressed unless you had 8 days. Okay, Sima. But I think people look at the candles to count which night of Hanukkah it is, not the members of the household, since now most people are Mehudah's mitzvah. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about in terms of what people do. We want to understand what the rabbis enacted. What was the idea? Charity wants to say, interesting thought. There were also eight people in Noah's Ark. All right. Okay. That's it really for Hanukkah. Now, unless there's any questions on this class, we'll take a few moments and just to clarify any questions that you may have, and then we'll go on to questions on other topics if you'd like. We'll spend a little time on that. Leah from Canada writes, So on the eighth day we have 40 candles, which is related to the 40 days. Again, you can't approach it this way by looking for correlations that just sound nice. We have to look at the actual structure of the command in and of itself. Okay, unless you have a source in the Torah, or the Oral Law, or the Mishnah, or the Gemara, then we are mandated to make a correlation. But it's not the right approach just to look at numbers. Okay. Okay, David, my pleasure. Chanukah Sameach to you too. Okay, any questions on the... I think we addressed all the questions. If you just want to have clarification. Understood, Charity. No problem. What is your question, Sima? We just answered it. is it clear? If everything is clear, please type okay, just so we know that everybody's got the answers clear. And again, we'll post the class online on our audio files. There's a link on our website for audio files. You can see it on your left-hand side of the screen. And you'll be able to listen to the class again or other audio classes that are available. Additionally, if anybody is interested... okay, Seema, the answer is that the reason why you ascend in candles is because you want to demonstrate another concept of the holiday, and that was the duration of 8 days of miracle. If I only light one each night, so I don't necessarily understand the fact that there was the duration of 8 days. I mean, you could hold a position that there were, you could say that if I have one candle each night, so that the 8 days collectively now take care of the duration of the miracle. Actually, maybe we'll do this tomorrow. We'll take this up because it's a good point. Because you could also, the Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai and the Gemara have an argument whether or not you start with eight and then each day you progressively take away a candle. That's Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says that you start with one candle and then you ascend in number, which is how we follow today. So if somebody will remind me tomorrow, we'll take that up tomorrow. My pleasure, Charity. All right, Seema, you got the answer now? The increase in candles, I'm suggesting, is in terms of increasing the aspect of the amount of miracles. According to Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, there's another view, but we can take that up tomorrow. Somebody just remind me. Now, if anybody is... I'm not sure how you heard about the class. If you want to get an email notification, on the bottom of the screen, to the right of the exit button, you'll see it says receive the class schedule. Click here. So that'll open up an email window, and just send, you can send a blank email message, and that will put you into the email list, and then you'll receive notifications in the future of the class. Alright, so if anybody did not come today based on the email, if you're not part of the email list, you could subscribe by putting in to receive the class schedule. You can click there. Okay, Seema, good. Okay, Bissala, maybe we'll take that up. That's actually something which is what Beis Shammai's view is. Why don't we descend from eight? Okay, maybe we'll take that up tomorrow. We'll take it up maybe in the beginning of the class tomorrow. Again, we'll start tomorrow at 1:30. That's New York time. Okay, any other questions? We'll take just a few questions now. It doesn't have to be on this topic, but if there's any questions that you have, we could use this. We still have a little time. Yeah, Bluma, go ahead. You have a halakha question. Go ahead, Bluma. Again, Arnold, what you're saying about descending from eight indicating reduction in light, and in our spiritual understanding, again, that's not, I don't see that based on any of the facts. Bluma, all three of you light. All three of you light, because all three of you are paying rent in that apartment, so you're all owners of that apartment. What are the questions? Bitzal is asking, what about guests who are head of their household? Bitzal, I'm not clear on what you're asking. Okay, Charity, you want to know what to teach? All right, go over the story. Charity, on our site, you'll see to the left on your screen white links. The third one down is philosophy. If you go to that page, in the bottom of that page, I don't know if you could do it now because you may lose the sound. But after the class is over, go to the philosophy link, and on the very bottom you'll see holidays. There's a few articles there on Hanukkah. Feel free to read through them and pick out what you think is apropos for your students. Bluma, no, you're supposed to. You're an owner in that house. You should light, and that's how you yotze. That's how you fulfill your obligation. If you're a guest at somebody's house, so then you can give them a little money to pay for the oil or the candles, and then they light for you. But when you're the owner yourself, you should be lighting it yourself. Unless it's impossible. Unless you can't be home in time when somebody's awake. But if you're definitely going to be at home at time when somebody's awake and it's not yet the morning, then you light. Alfred, we're not limiting the questions to Hanukkah right now. You can ask what you want. So again, Bluma, you only have one person lighting and fulfilling if you're a guest or if you're all part of the same family. But when you're three individuals that are renting together, so then you all have an obligation to light. But Salo, if the family comes for guests, if they come as a guest for dinner and arrive before sunset, let them light when they come home then. They can definitely light when they come home because they're all coming home together, everybody's awake, and you're definitely not going to be coming home at 4 in the morning. So light when you come home. That's what the law is. And you don't light in somebody else's house. You don't bring your own menorah to somebody else's house. And the practice of what people do about, you know, people making public, like there's certain Orthodox groups, and they'll make a big thing in a park somewhere, and they'll light, and they'll say a prayer, that is completely prohibited. It's using God's name in vain if you say the prayer. And it's not commanded, so you can't do that. So that's wrong. If anybody, any group lights in a public area, it's not your home, you're not allowed to do that. And you're not allowed to say the prayer either. You're welcome, Bluma. But Sal, if you stay overnight, then you don't bring your menorah. Then you just give some money to the household to cover the costs. You know, you pay for half of the menorah, and they'll have you in mind. But you would still say the prayer of Al Anisim and Shechianu. You wouldn't say the prayer of Lahadlik. Okay, Charity, good luck with the class. That's true, B'Tzalel, but that's not part of the Torah system. Right, what Chabad does in terms of lighting the menorah outside, that's not something which is a command, so we shouldn't do it. We should never do anything which is not a command. That's why we have a system of only 613 Torah laws and all the thousands of rabbinic laws. Certainly you can't say the prayer. That's not something which you're allowed to do. You're only allowed to do the prayer in your house. Nissim is asking, if one lives alone, may you light in the doorway as long as there are people passing outside? Yeah, you could light in your doorway. That's fine. That's true, Sima. You won't find that as part of the command. Public demonstrations of lighting menorah is not what the rabbis had ordained as the command, and we have to stay to, you know, the Torah says, and it's in Deuteronomy 17:11, that you shouldn't veer from what the rabbis tell us left or right. Well, Amy, you can't have a situation where you have a male guest and there's a female alone at night. So that you can't even have that situation, let alone lighting a menorah. That's called yichud. The command, Bisalel, you're asking whether the command is meant to be done outside your doorway. Only if you have a courtyard in front of your house, and that's where the gate to the entrance is. So then the gate of your courtyard that's in front of your house, the lawn, would be the entrance. Then you'd put it there. I can't answer you, Liz, on the electric menorah. I mean, I've never seen that as being accepted. It has to be a flame. Unless you speak to Orthodox rabbi who explains that this is acceptable practice, because then you might say that electric flame is considered real fire. I mean, electricity is defined as fire in certain contexts of Torah law. Amy, it doesn't matter if it's a relative, unless it's a brother. I mean, a cousin wouldn't be allowed. But if it's a brother, then you're fine, Amy. Then the head of the household should light, in your case. And if your brother's coming over, he should give you some money. And this way, you're taking care of his obligation. Jack, if you're responding to the thing about Chabad, that their lighting influences other Jews, it may be true. But the question is it allowed by Torah law? We can't look for benefits which were not part of what our actual law is. That's the whole system of halacha, Jewish law, is defined. It's not open for people to do what they feel. And there is no source to say that you could light it if it's not in your house. It has to be in your home. Okay, any other questions? Amy, is that clear? Okay, Lizzie, my pleasure. You have any other questions? You can type them in. Otherwise, we'll end it off for today. Okay, Alfred, California. Why do we need money? Others can keep us in mind for Kiddush Havdalah. That's a good question. No, Jack. You're saying about. I'll get back to you, Alfred, in 1 second. Jack, regarding what you're saying, that the menorah, that the Chabad is going to light in a public area that's not part of the house, does not take the place of their home, because it has to be in your home. Alfred's question, why do we need money? Others can keep us in mind for Kiddush. It's a good question. Why would you need money? That's a good question, Jack. I have to think about that. I don't have an answer. It's a very good question. Do me a favor, Jack. Write that down. And hopefully you'll be back tomorrow. I'll give some thought to it. All right, Gene, South Carolina, my pleasure. I don't understand. Jack, you're asking, your mother who lives alone and lives with oxygen can't light? You mean to say that it's a fire hazard? No, you can't risk your life. If you have oxygen in the house and it's going to ignite, so you can't risk your life to do Hanukkah. Amy is writing, I give money to my friend's husband for him to light at my house. No. You don't give money to somebody who doesn't live in the house. It has to be the house head, the one who owns the house. Okay, Jack, good. Please remind me tomorrow, Jack. Amy, you don't light at your son's house. You give your son money, and he takes care of it for you. I wouldn't do electric menorahs, Jack. Not until we find out that that is defined as a flame. Okay, Alfred, have a good day. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. If you're dwelling in a hotel, I have to think about that, but since you're renting the room, that's where you lodge. And there's nobody lighting at home. Bezalel, is anybody lighting in your house? If so, they would light on your behalf. If everybody is leaving the house and going to a hotel, I have to look into that for you. I would think, though, that since you're renting the hotel, that is now where you're lodging. you're away in the hotel and there's people in your house, let the people in your house light and have you in mind. But you would still say the prayer when you see other people's menorahs. You'd still say Allah Nisim and also Shechianu. Shechianu is only the first night, tonight. After tonight, you only say the Allah Nisim. Okay, so there's no more questions. I think what we're going to do is we're going to wrap it up for today. We'll pick it up again tomorrow at 1:30. And I wish everybody a very happy Hanukkah. And when you light the menorah, think about the ideas. Again, on the site, you'll see here in our philosophy link at the bottom, there's a holiday section and there's a number of articles on Hanukkah. Also, last week in the Jewish Times, you'll see to the left, in the menu of white links on the left hand side of our website, you'll see the sixth link down is Jewish Times. You can download this week's the current Jewish Times. It has a few articles on Hanukkah. It covers a lot of the points that we addressed. Feel free to print it out. Okay, so everybody have a very good Hanukkah, and I look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. I hope everybody enjoyed the class. Take care. Chag Sameach to you, Lou.